We're exploring what it's like to be a woman in the male-dominated world of sports media. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Attorney-turned-sports journalist Julie DeCaro didn't set out to be a sports talk radio show host. But then again, this wasn't a space where she ever heard women's voices growing up in sports-hungry Chicagoland. And she fondly recalls listening to Chicago's WGN radio with her dad. But when she stopped practicing law, she says she immediately felt the pressure to objectify and demean women, including herself, to fit the mold of sports radio. Are you a woman who plays sports, a coach, or a sports reporter? How are you treated? How did you get to the place you're at? Outside of sports, have you had to change yourself to fit into a male-dominated industry? 800-642-1234. Julie DeCaro is a sports writer, a senior writer and editor at Deadspin, and her new book is called Sidelines: Sports Culture and Being a Woman in America. Julie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, your Twitter bio, it reads recovering lawyer, but I'm thinking, Julie, wait, you're a recovering sports radio talk show host.
Yeah, that's more new than recovering lawyer.
How did you make that leap between those two very different worlds?
Well, you know, I was a journalism major, and growing up, I wanted to be a sports reporter. I wanted to do play-by-play for the Chicago Cubs, actually. And, but, you know, graduating journalism school, there was no one for me really to look at and say, that's the path I want to take. That's the career I want to have. There weren't a lot of women working in sports media, and certainly not on TV where you could see them. So, you know, I went to law school, I became a lawyer, but my love for sports and sports writing remained. And when blogs became a thing in the early 2000s, I started blogging about the Chicago Cubs and developed a following on my blog. And a couple years later, the Chicago Tribune picked it up and put it on their blog network. And then it just sort of snowballed from there. I developed a following. And when Chicago's WGN Radio said, we're going to start an FM sports talk station, they reached out to me to be one of the people on the air. And so it was kind of a circuitous path to do something that I had always wanted to do since I was a kid.
But when you arrived on the scene, you were pretty shocked by the culture, what you encountered as a woman in sports talk radio. What was it like?
It was pretty shocking. You know, and not to say that there isn't sexism and misogyny and racism and all those things in the legal field. There absolutely are. But at least people know the law and they're not quite so blatant about it. I mean, it's a very strange sensation. I worked at a law firm that was all women. And then, you know, suddenly I am the only woman in a room. I would go entire days without seeing a woman unless I ran into someone from another station in the bathroom.
And you had to go to a different floor to use the bathroom.
Yeah, when they were renovating, they left the men's bathroom open, but they closed off the women's bathroom on our floor. So for several months, it was like you can either use the men's bathroom or you can go up a couple of flights to use the women's bathroom, which wasn't feasible during a radio show when you only have 4-minute breaks. So it went from feeling very much included and very much part of the community to really feeling like an outlier in another industry.
And there aren't many women, as you mentioned, doing this kind of work behind the mic. What were some of those comments you heard from listeners, from the people who listen to sports talk radio?
Yeah, it's funny. I think we all get the same comments, no matter how different women sound on the air. So it's, you know, immediately your voice is shrill, your voice is annoying, your voice is too high, your voice is too low, you sound like a man, you sound like my mom, you sound like my ex-wife. And, you know, I had people, men, flat out tell me, I go to sports talk radio to get away from women's voices. I don't want to hear a woman when I turn the radio on. And that was a pretty typical thing to hear from a lot of people. And what it comes down to at the end of the day, because they say the same thing. If you go on social media, you see it about Beth Mowins when she's calling a football game. You see it about Doris Burke when she's calling a basketball game. You see it about Jessica Mendoza when she's calling a baseball game. It's always the same thing. It's that your voice is shrill. Your voice is annoying. And I think what it really comes down to is that what they don't like about our voices is that we sound like women.
We're talking, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Julie DeCaro, who is a sports journalist, an editor, senior writer at Deadspin, former attorney. We're looking at her new book, Sidelined: Sports, Culture, and Being a Woman in America. Are you a woman in a male-dominated workforce or job or office? What has that been like? Do you work in sports, in the sports industry? Where are you at in the industry? What do you see? 800-642-1234 to join in. Email ideas at WPR.org. Julie, let's talk locker rooms. You know, you go in depth to the history of women journalists being allowed into the locker room to do their interviews. What has it been like over these 40 years of women trying to get a place in the locker room to get the story?
Well, you know, back when Melissa Ludke and Claire Smith and Leslie Visser and Christine Brennan were the first women into locker rooms, you know, it was a big story because it was, oh, they're, you know, these women want to see naked men. They fought to be able to see naked men when, you know, it had nothing to do with the reason why they wanted to go into locker rooms. That was where the stories were happening. They didn't make the decision that players should be interviewed in locker rooms. That's Major League Baseball made that decision. So, you know, in 1976, Melissa Ludke sues Bowie Kuhn, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, to be able to go into locker rooms to do her job, and she wins. And, you know, 40 years later, there still aren't many women in locker rooms. There still aren't that many women in the industry, especially covering beats. So it feels like we should have made more progress in 40 years. Sure, you can go into locker rooms, but, you know, women still deal with sexual harassment in locker rooms. You know, we've just had the stories come out about Mickey Callaway and Jared Porter, both men in baseball, who are accused of sexually harassing women. I know a story about a pretty beloved NFL player who had a reputation for the way that he behaved towards women in the locker rooms. And, you know, just a couple years ago in Indianapolis, we had a female beat reporter kept out of the locker room by an usher who didn't think she belonged there. So we've made progress in the world in terms of women being more present in all kinds of industries, including sports, but it doesn't feel like we've come nearly as far as we should have.
Why are journalists in the locker room in the first place?
Right?
It doesn't make sense. I mean, why don't you just change it that way?
Right. And like I said, you know, it's sports that have decided that that's where things take place. And that's where you get the most immediate reaction after a game. You know, Melissa Ludke was covering the Yankees in the World Series. And she says, you know, she had to wait outside for them to bring men out to talk to her. And everything was happening in the locker room during those times. There was a war of words between Reggie Jackson and Billy Martin, the manager. And, you know, she dutifully stood outside and did what she was supposed to do. And they bring Reggie Jackson out to her after he's already spoken to everyone else and given all the great quotes and everything. And he says, you know what, Melissa, I'm tired. I'm leaving. So, you know, it's an awkward situation. I don't think anyone wants to be in a locker room. They smell. There's naked people walking around, guys in various states of undress. They're humid. They're steamy. It's just the weirdest thing. There's no other industry where we interview people in their underwear or wrapped in a towel. And it is very bizarre. And we are starting to see teams bring guys out into press rooms and make them available that way. But it is just the weirdest thing about pro sports that it's just the most natural thing to follow guys into the locker room while they're changing and undressing. And that's where you're supposed to interview them. It's bizarre.
Yeah. And, you know, as you write about this, it's not, you know, once women do get access to the locker room, you know, what happens in the locker room is another story.
Yeah, for sure. In the book, we talk about stuff that happened to women once they got in. Like, one woman had a bucket of ice cold water dumped over her head. Women have stories about jock straps being thrown at them, dirty jock straps, being pulled onto guys' laps constantly while they're trying to do their job. So, yeah, I mean, the court said you have to allow women in the locker room. But it's many, many more years, I think, before the behavior in the locker room actually began to change.
We're talking with sports journalist Julie DeCaro, who gives a sobering look at how women are treated as they work in sports media. Her new book is called Sidelined. Do you know what it's like to be the only woman in a male-dominated workplace? What have you learned about yourself, your colleagues, your industry? How did you get to where you are without role models? What advice has served you well in this role? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Julie DeCaro here on the Ideas Network. Start working on your thick skin now. That's advice from sports journalist Julie DeCaro. We're talking about what it's like to be a woman in a male-dominated sports media industry that Julie calls, quote, a toxic stew of gender inequality. Julie takes stock of what has changed more than 40 years after the first group of women sports writers made their way into player locker rooms to get interviews alongside their male counterparts. What have you noticed about women in sports? I was happy sad last month watching the Super Bowl as Sarah Thomas made history as the first woman to referee a Super Bowl. Really? It took that long? 800-642-1234 to join in. Julie DeCaro's book is called Sidelined, and she's with us for the hour. Cole is joining us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Cole. What are your insights?
Yeah, well, I just want to say thanks for talking about this. I have an 18-month-old daughter, first child, and so it makes me happy to see people pushing for more equality for women in the workplace so that she has a bright future and can do what she wants. And so I just wanted to share that my wife's cousin, Allie Wagner, who is an Olympic soccer athlete, and now does broadcasts for Fox Sports, and was one of the first women to announce the men's world championship. So I started following her a bit when we got married, and I can totally see, you know, a lot of the stereotypes and the blowback. Just from comments here and there on her Twitter feed or while she's announcing games sometimes. But it's great that she's been able to persevere too and be in a prominent role and position where other women and girls can see her doing this for sports that like soccer that have been traditionally male dominated as well.
Oh, Cole, thank you so much for sharing that story. And, you know, props there to Allie Wagner, Julie. But then again, Cole points out the stereotypes and blowback on the Twitter feed.
Yeah. And second, online harassment is a huge issue for women working in sports media, women working in media in general, or for that matter, just being a woman on social media that has an opinion. But for those of us working in sports media, I mean, you really do have to wade through this very toxic stew of people insulting you, often threatening you and telling you all the horrible things they'd like to see happen to you, you know, in order to do your job. Allie Wagner is a terrific, terrific reporter for play-by-play color announcer. And it's great to see women in the broadcast booth. It's one of those things that I think we need to do to normalize women being involved in sports. So, you know, turning on a game and just seeing three white guys covering the game is something that we've gotten really used to. So when we see a woman in the booth or we hear a woman's voice when a game is happening, it's jarring to a lot of people. And that leads to a lot of that social media harassment where you get done with your shift or you get done with your show or your match or whatever you're doing. And suddenly you look at your mentions and you've got, you know, hundreds of people telling you how horrible you are and how much they hate you. I definitely relate to her having to deal with some of that.
When you look at the structure, the play-by-play, who's doing the play-by-play, the men, who's doing the color commentary, the men, you know, women doing the sideline work or staying back in the studio, how do you change up that formula?
Well, I think part of it has to do with who's doing the hiring and firing. So we're starting to see more women behind the camera. We're starting to see more women in producer roles. We need to get women into the positions, program director, executive producer, people who have the power to decide whose voices you're going to hear. And that's where we've really been stuck. You know, when women started getting into the broadcast booth for the very first time in the early 80s, I think when Gail Sirens did an NFL game, we thought, you know, that was smashing through the glass ceiling and there would be a huge rush of women coming behind. But that really hasn't been the case. And it's about getting women into the pipeline, starting in college, putting them on the same path that the men go through that wind up in those positions. But then also having someone in the decision-making roles who's willing to put a woman in that role. And that's what we haven't seen a lot of.
You know, you talk about the Whisper Network, and I'm wondering if you can share, you know, why don't women in sports media speak up about the experiences they encounter, especially in light of the Me Too movement? There is space for it. Tell us about this Whisper Network.
Yeah, well, I think we do speak up. We just speak up to each other and not publicly. There are, you know, a lot of group texts out there and a lot of secret Facebook groups and, you know, groups of women where we talk about what's happening to us, to each other. When the Me Too movement really got going in force in 2017, we all sort of waited. Because everybody knows who the guys are. Everybody knows the stories. And so we sat there and we sort of waited for it to happen, for it to roll through sports like it was rolling through news media and all these other industries. And it just never came. There were some fits and starts. You know, we had a woman suing the NFL Network, suing ESPN for harassment at the hands of some of the guys that we see on TV. And we thought that was going to open the door, but it really didn't. And we're still sort of waiting. So we get these moments where we can talk about it. For example, we just went through one in baseball with Jared Porter being fired by the Mets and Mickey Callaway being revealed to have been harassing women for years. But then it just sort of stops. And I think the reason is there just aren't enough of us in the industry. You know, like I said, I would go to work and I was the only woman. Where are my allies there? Who do I go to talk to about this? And, you know, when I look back on the Me Too movement, you see, you know, the women that took down Harvey Weinstein or the women that took down Matt Lauer. There were groups of women that did this. And if you don't have groups of women in a workplace, it makes it really difficult to affect change. And not only that, it sort of contributes to the culture of keeping things quiet because you don't want to rock the boat. You don't want to be labeled as difficult. You just want to keep your head down and do your job.
We're talking with Julie DeCaro, who is a sports journalist, senior writer and editor at Deadspin. We're talking about the obstacles that women face on the field behind the mic, and her new book is Sidelined. Julie, when you look at instances of domestic violence and you see issues with the way domestic violence is addressed and covered in sports, how difficult has it been to shed light on this issue?
It's pretty difficult for a lot of different reasons. You know, first off, if you're working for a media outlet that has a relationship with a league or with a team or even just relies on access to players as, you know, for their daily workings of their outlet, it's difficult because nobody wants to alienate the team or the player or the league and have them cut off access, which is something that happens. And, you know, there are a lot of factors at play. One of them is that once a team says we're looking into it, and once a guy comes out and says, I take domestic violence seriously, I look forward to the investigation, blah, 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 the victim usually winds up recanting or not continuing with the allegations. And then we're not supposed to talk about it anymore. And that's it. And you're not supposed to bring it up again. And as a result, there's never really any kind of reckoning or satisfaction that there's been justice or that the right thing happened or you know the full story. So I think that for a lot of us, it just sort of builds up into this sort of simmering resentment that we're not allowed to talk about it. And I mean, there are some people who are happy to talk about just what's on the field. But I think that for a lot of us, you know, sports are a way that we have always worked through our issues.
It's a bigger picture. There's more to the story.
That's absolutely right. I mean, whether it is Jackie Robinson integrating baseball before we integrated America, or whether it's Billie Jean King and gender equality, or Muhammad Ali protesting the Vietnam War, I mean, sports has always been our entree into working our issues out. And unfortunately, one of the issues that we've been able to talk about, at least outside of the realm of sports among each other, is the way that violence against women impacts women in society.
And as you mentioned there, you know, we can look at social justice issues through the lens of sports, but why is it difficult to discuss sexism in the industry itself, to shine a light inside the industry itself?
Well, I think, you know, people don't want the powers that be, whether it's teams or media outlets, they want you to watch and they want you to listen, right? And they don't want you to feel bad about sports. They want you to feel good about sports. So anything that detracts from feeling good about it, from, you know, violence against women by players to the way that women are treated at their jobs, isn't fun, happy sports stuff, which is what, you know, people want it to be. So it's difficult. You get pushback from the powers that be above you, and you get pushback from the people who listen to you, who don't necessarily want to be thinking about that when they're hearing about sports anyway.
Journalist Julie DeCaro broke into sports talk radio mid-career, age 40. She's taken aback by what she found being a woman where there are very few. Time for you to talk about this. Her new book is Sidelined, 800-642-1234. Do you have a daughter interested in a professional career in sports or sports journalism? How do you foster that? We'll pick this up after a news update here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about women in sports media on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. When sports journalist Julie DeCaro broke into sports talk radio after a career as an attorney, she had no idea she'd spend so much time worrying about the sound of her voice. She had no trace of vocal fry, no uptalk to speak of. And still, as she says, the listener comments, the male sports fans were brutal, shrill, annoying. Sounds like my wife nagging me. Have you changed your speech or mannerisms to fit your industry? What do you think of women sports broadcasters calling games, reffing male sports, or hosting sports talk radio? Join in, 800-642-1234. Julie DeCaro's book is called Sidelined, Sports Culture and Being a Woman in America, and she's with us for the hour. Julie, let's talk Barstool Sports, the sports and pop culture website, which is known for its social media personality and founder, Dave Portnoy. What do you find damaging about Barstool Sports and what this online media company is doing?
Well, you know, there's no dearth of inappropriate things that Barstool has said, whether or Dave Portnoy in particular have said. There's from, you know, women who wear a size 6 skinny jean deserve to be raped. There's been, you know, obviously just a whole host of xenophobic and racist comments, homophobic comments. And you can find those all over social media. You just have to do a search. You know, the problem, I think, with Barstool is that they have, and they will say that this is nothing coming from them, but there is a history of them publicly calling out people in media and then having their followers basically come down on them like a nuclear bomb, harassing them until, I mean, they've harassed people off of social media. I know people who have wound up in therapy because of their harassment. It happened to me, and I can tell you it is horrific. And there's no accountability for it. There's no recognition of it. And they are, as far as I know, the only outlet that has to continually tell their followers, don't do this to people. And I guess the question is, why is that? I mean, this is an outlet that rose to the top on saying things that are found to be funny by a small group of men of a certain age, you know, mostly college age humor. And they've built an empire on, you know, saying horrific things about women, saying horrific things about, you know, members of the LGBTQ community, making racist jokes. And I just don't think that you can do that to get to the top that way. And then once you get there, say, OK, well, we're here now. No one is allowed to criticize us. And if you do, we're going to come after you. So I've been critical of Barstool for quite some time. They on Monday, well, the day that my book came out, they took the entire book and read it for 7.5 hours on YouTube. So they published my entire book without my permission. And this is the kind of thing that they do to people that, that criticize them. It's been going on for a long time. And because they are so good at and so organized at harassing people, no one wants to talk about it. And as Soledad O'Brien talks about, she tried to do a story on Barstool at Real Sports, and they reached out to something like 15 women, and nobody was willing to go on the air because you know what's going to happen. Unfortunately, a lot of people know Barstool just as the funny guys that put thing, you know, put funny videos on social media. But there's actually a lot more going on in the history that they have with people and in the stuff that they continue to do. So it's problematic, and it serves to further marginalize women and Black people and people of color from the industry by basically pointing out that we're different and constantly making jokes about it that I think would probably get anyone else fired from their outlet. But at Barstool, it seems to be par for the course.
But it has a woman CEO at its helm. How do you balance that out?
I mean, I don't think that just that, look, there are always women that are willing to do the work of the patriarchy, right? I mean, we've seen that for a long time. There are women who, it's the same reason that you see women voting for Donald Trump, despite the things that he said about women. Doesn't mean that women don't internalize sexism. I think that Erica Nardini, who's their CEO, is basically there to provide cover for them. She hasn't, as far as I know, I've never seen her call out their behavior. She talks about how she's for women's empowerment. But like I said, they read my entire book on the air, and I've heard crickets from her about that. So, I mean, I think that she's just another layer of protection for them. And she's allowed them that when they are rightfully called out for being sexist to just point and say, hey, we have a woman CEO. How can we be sexist? And, you know, clearly that's not the case.
What do you think it will take to solve this online harassment, or where the darker sides, if you will, of sports?
It's a great question. You know, on the one hand, I've sort of given up that Twitter is ever going to do anything about it. I mean, I think Twitter has a pretty easy fix in that once you block someone, you should be able to block them by IP address or whatever the latest way is to keep someone from coming back and just creating new accounts over and over and over again, which is something that happens to a lot of us. You block someone, they make a new account. You block someone, they make a new account. So that's the first problem is with the platforms. Another problem is that employers routinely just sort of leave their employees out there twisting in the wind. If you're in the middle of a social media storm, infamously, Felicia Somnez of the Washington Post had to flee her home and go stay in a hotel room after she posted an article about Kobe Bryant's sexual assault charges post his death, and got harassed. And the Washington Post, you know, didn't protect her, just left her out there to absorb the harassment. It's happened to a lot of us who have gone to our companies asking for help. And the attitude has sort of been, if you say something on social media that we don't like, then we'll step in. But if people are doing it to you, then it's your problem. And that's just not a feasible way for us to move forward with as online presence becomes a bigger and bigger part of our lives, as harassment becomes more and more emboldened because there's never any consequences. You know, we sort of find ourselves stuck. And I don't know that. It feels like we're past the point of return where we could have put this genie back in the bottle.
We're looking at how women are treated in the sports world with Julie DeCaro. She's a sports journalist, editor at Deadspin. You can join in. Do you have a daughter who is interested in a professional career in sports or in sports journalism? How do you foster that? What do you say? Are you nervous about the challenges she'll face? Join in at 800-642-1234. We heard from Amanda, who emailed to say women have had to leverage male leadership strategies to get into senior positions. And Amanda says once women are in that role, it's important for them to not perpetuate traditional leadership strategies and instead help other women and men move through the ranks by utilizing strategies like empathy, like love-based leadership and kindness. Amanda says this is how we evolve the status quo and the business as usual and redefine success for women and men in leadership and across organizations. Julie, your thoughts?
It's such a great point. Unfortunately, I think that, you know, we have seen quite a few women move into male-dominated roles, male-dominated positions in their company, and then sort of adopt the exact same ways of operating that men did before they got there. I was really excited to get a female CEO of Entercom in Chicago, who was, going to be making the hiring and firing decisions. And the first thing she did was get rid of all the women on the station. So, it's not necessarily saying that, to have a woman in a position means that you are now going to have a female-friendly workplace. And I think that that is a great point, that women tend to lead differently, and they tend to build by they try to build coalitions, try to have solidarity, try to have consensus. And that's how women lead. And I think that it's important to continue that, even if you're in a role that has been traditionally held by males in your business.
What about crying? What about showing emotion? What are your thoughts there?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I think we've all cried at work. Soraya Shamali, who wrote Rage Becomes Her, has a really interesting take on why we cry, and that, it is the one emotion that women are allowed when we are children, that we're allowed to cry and be sad and upset. If we're angry, we get disciplined. And so I think it leads to a place where women now, and I know a lot of women out there can relate to this, that when you are angry and frustrated because something is unjust and unfair, that instead of getting angry, the tears just start and you hate it. I know I hate it, and I'm a person like that. And, I think it gets viewed in the workplace as manipulation or as weakness, when actually what it is the only way that we've been allowed to express rage throughout our life is through tears. So I write about Serena Williams in the 2018 U.S. Open final and watching her cry with frustration, and the way that was interpreted by so many men versus the way it was interpreted by women. I think men saw it as a temper tantrum, as her trying to manipulate the ref. Whereas I think women could really relate to when you just feel that something is so unfair, you want to stand up for yourself, but all that come are tears. I know that's a really, really frustrating and common situation we find ourselves in at work.
What are the, you mentioned Serena Williams, and in 2018, she was penalized after she called the chair umpire a thief. Can you remind us what happened there in the lead up to that moment?
So, I'm trying to remember specifically what happened, but he was basically, the ref was calling her out on little ticky-tack fouls that basically he had been letting go the entire tournament. So one of them was, that your ref is coaching you from the sidelines, which everyone's coach does apparently, the coach was coaching her from the sidelines. Another was that she threw, she kind of bounced her racket in frustration and then caught it, and he penalized her for throwing her racket. Things that we've seen men do over and over and over. I mean, think back to John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors yelling at the refs, and the things that they would say. And, he penalized her, and he took a point for her and from her, and basically accused her of cheating. And she was very upset by that. She kept insisting, I don't cheat. I'd rather lose than cheat. And he was just sort of very smug about the power that he had over her. I thought it was very ugly. It played out, on a huge stage in the U.S. Open final. And Naomi Osaka wound up winning that. But both women were in tears by the end of it because of the way that it had gone down. And afterwards, the reaction, like I said, seemed to be very divided along gender lines, whether you saw her crying as a temper tantrum or whether you saw her crying as, an attempt to express herself in a moment when she was just full of rage.
We are spending the hour with sports journalist Julie DeCaro, who gives a scathing review of how little has changed for women in sports media and what she calls, we've been talking about, the whisper network of women sports reporters who do not speak openly about what they've experienced on the job. Are you a woman who plays sports or coaches or works in sports broadcasting? How are you treated, and how did you get to the place you're at? What can you say about your place in the sports world? Is it a man's place? What has changed for the better? What feels stuck to you? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with sports journalist Julie DeCaro. So she left her attorney practice mid-career to land in a very different industry as a Chicago sports radio talk show host. And what she found was a male-dominated industry that hasn't changed in light of Me Too, in light of other societal efforts to level the playing field for women, to diversify the workforce. And she writes about how there are so many things women in sports media have to put up with. She said she never felt more alone in her life than at her recent job as a sports radio talk show host. And she lost her job last year in the pandemic. Her new book is called Sidelined, and she's with us for 10 more minutes. Julie, let's talk pay. Let's talk money. You are very transparent in what you made as a talk show host, but also in that you, in stacked up against your male colleagues, it probably was very, very different.
It was very different. I never made it past being a part-time employee, even though I had a weekly radio show at a weeknight radio show, and I had a weekend radio show. I was never able to get past part-time, and I was never able to sort of break into daytime. And so I was still paid $25 an hour, $50 an hour when I was hosting, and my show was 2 hours long. So, you know, you can do the math on what I was making, you know, and we, you know, it's sports talk radio is strange because you do have people who are in some of the same roles who are making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, who have contracts and who have, you know, agents, and they're negotiating. And then you have the people who, you know, every time that you are asked for a raise, you're sort of told, well, there's just no more money, which is something that I was told quite often. And, you know, the other thing is that there has been a real movement among women in sports media to tell each other what they're making, because we have learned that we are wildly disparate in our salaries. And you don't necessarily know what to ask for unless you know what the range is and what other people are making. And we need men to be transparent about what they're making as well, because we don't know if we're making, you know, 72 cents on the dollar compared to a colleague who's doing the same job, unless we know what they're making. So there's been a real push for not only women to share with each other, but for men in the industry to share as well.
What happened when you asked for more? What were those conversations like?
I mean, just nothing nefarious, just told, you know, there's not money. There's no money. I'm sorry. I'd love to bring you on full time, but I can't. But then, you know, then a couple months later, suddenly a huge name comes in and gets a huge contract. So clearly there is money. It's just where where stations decide to spend it. And I'm far from the only person that has happened to in this industry. And I know in radio in particular, it's been very difficult for women to get into daytime radio hosting. There's a lot of us who work part time, who work in the evenings and who work overnights. And it's just sort of the way that things seem to be in radio by and large. It's an industry, and particularly in sports talk radio, that just isn't necessarily as interested in diversity and inclusion as certainly their television counterparts are. But even as the rest of the media, you know, radio media industry goes.
What do you see at larger organizations? And I'm going to call it out, like ESPN. How do you compare those types of organizations in diversifying the workforce and putting women in these roles that are, in front of the camera or else, higher up in the leadership positions?
Yeah, I don't know necessarily about what ESPN's corporate structure situation is as far as having women, moving up the ladder there. But I will say that, you know, if you're looking at women in front of the camera and behind the camera, I think ESPN is by far the most diverse outlet out there. In fact, when you take ESPN out of the mix, the percentage of women working in sports media goes down dramatically. There's actually women leaving the industry, more women leaving, I think, than are coming in. The number of women working, for example, you know, at newspapers, at print outlets has been going down. There are going to be a huge generation of women coming into the sports world because of what they've seen on ESPN, because they've seen people that look like them on camera, which is terrific. That's something that I, you know, hadn't seen when I was their age, except for in very limited circumstances. And ESPN also does other things for their employees that I think are really important. They are by far the best when it comes to providing security for their reporters and for people in front of the camera when they are being harassed socially. And so when it comes to that kind of thing, and when it comes to putting, you know, people who look like 50% of the population in front of the camera and in a high profile position where people can see them. I think they do that better than anyone else, but there still aren't enough women across the board.
Have women athletes made any inroads in pay? I mean, we saw the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, which had very publicly sued its employer, the U.S. Soccer Federation, for gender discrimination. Where are legal fights like that?
Well, the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team just settled the sort of the extraneous parts of their lawsuit. So the parts that were about equality in travel accommodations, in hotel accommodations, being able to play on actual grass rather than on AstroTurf. So that part of their lawsuit has been settled. The part that was dismissed, which was really the meat of it, which was the equal pay for equal work, was dismissed by the judge, but is going to be on appeal. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens in that case, because a lot of us thought the judge's reasons for tossing it were a little bit wonky. So that'll be interesting. You know, it's a huge case, and it's a case where the women took a salary rather than relying on bonuses that sort of reward them for winning, because they don't have the same opportunities to play that the men do. Mm. But it turns out that the women actually bring in more revenue than the men and sell more tickets and are more successful. So now they're sort of in this situation where they should even go above and beyond what they have. And you were starting to see the pushback on that. The WNBA negotiated, I think, what is going to be the gold standard going forward for women's pro sports organizations. You know, we've got WNBA players who are over 6 feet tall, who are all riding in coach, all scrunched up together, who had to share hotel rooms, double up on hotel rooms. And so they've gotten quite a good deal. Although in terms of money, it is still just a small fraction of what the men get. And, you know, people always say, well, the WNBA doesn't bring in as much money, or the WNBA is not profitable. There are WNBA teams that are very profitable. There are NBA teams that are not profitable. So, you know, it's not quite as simple as just saying, well, the women should make less. They don't bring in as much money.
Another thing you point out is that female fans aren't watching much women's sports either. Men aren't prioritizing it. Women aren't prioritizing it. So how do you elevate it?
Well, I think we saw a lot of it over the summer with the Black Lives Matter movement, and the women from the WNBA, who really led that entire movement in the sports world, really speaking out, and people getting to know them because they were speaking out about Breonna Taylor or about Ahmaud Arbery or the Black Lives Matter movement. That kind of stuff matters. You know, when you're watching a game and you don't know who any of the people are, and you don't know any of the backstories, you don't know who has beef with who, like we do in the NBA, you don't know the history of the coach and he's returning to coach a team that kicked him out. If you just don't know that stuff, sports suddenly becomes a lot less interesting. And I think as more people are watching women's sports and we're learning who the athletes are and we're learning their stories and their backstories, many more people are starting to watch because now it's interesting. So people know Megan Rapinoe, and they know that she's been very outspoken about equal pay as well as racial justice in this country. People know who Alex Morgan is. People know who Carly Lloyd is. People know who Maya Moore and Renee Montgomery and Asia Wilson are. So suddenly it becomes more interesting because you know the stories of the people playing. And that's where we really need to get for, you know, women's sports, I think, to go to the next level.
Yeah, saying their names, saying their story.
Yep.
Julie, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Julie DeCaro is a senior writer and editor at Deadspin and a former attorney. Her book is called Sidelined: Sports, Culture, and Being a Woman in America. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.